skeletal forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies. As always, we are your horror hosts. I am Caitlin.
And I am Jenny.
And welcome to a series of sequels, part two.
This is part two of our series of sequels, part two.
I mean, we never had a part one, but because it's about sequels, we thought it would be funny to call it part two.
Yeah.
It was part two for the last film.
And this is episode two of part two.
It is episode two. Last week, we blessed your ears with Friday the 13th, part two.
Electric Boogaloo.
Rah-Rah Rasputin, the introduction of Freddy. No.
Jason.
Nigel.
The introduction of Nigel. Why have we not done a horror franchise with Nigel?
I don't know. It's such a menacing name.
Yeah, Nigel. What would his weapon of...
He fucks up your taxes. Oh, God. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
And then you find out 2 months later that you owe $3,000. And you're like, fucking Nigel.
Nigel.
Nigel strikes again. Nigel, the bad tax accountant. And he wears like one of those green visors. I don't know. I just really like the name Nigel, apparently.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So coming to a screen near you. The new horror franchise.
This summer.
Nigel. Nigel X.
Nigel X.
Can we just go straight to, like, the shitty 10th film?
Yeah, we'll start on the 10th film. Yeah. Oh, I know. We'll start with the 10th and work our way back. And then the first one will be, like, the origin story.
And it has to actually be good.
Nigel's, like, at uni, and he's like, I don't think I can do it. Taxes aren't for me.
One night he snaps and goes on a vicious accounting spree.
I will not allow that to be submitted as an expense.
Does he, like, then kill the people?
No, it's just a slow death by bad taxes. So actually, maybe the 10th one is, like, everyone died, but it starts way back with the first one, with just some small missteps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like we need to flesh out Nigel a little bit more.
We do. I feel like ultimately it sounds a little boring, but that's... It's just not true. There's so much scope there for real life terror. Anyway.
Well, we're not talking about Nigel and his taxes today. We're talking about the Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows.
It's a shame, really. Well, and which one's more interesting? I guess Blair Witch, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it had Marilyn Manson.
It did have Marilyn Manson in the soundtrack. I think ultimately what's happening here is that it's a bit of an experiment, which is that Jenny is of the, you know, argument that sequels can be good, if not better, than the original.
I mean, there are very few that I would say are better, but I don't hate on sequels the way you do. I am always, like, if I've watched a good film, I am always happy to hear that they're making a sequel. Well, most, 80% of the time, happy to hear that they're making a sequel. Yeah. I'm more happy about sequels than I am about reboots.
Oh, completely agree. The reboot thing has got to stop. Or the, what's the word for it, when they reboot it, but redo it, but it's also a prequel.
That makes my head hurt. I mean, Nigel. Maybe Nigel will know.
No, there's a name for it, like a retcon.
Retcon, that's
it.
Well,
yes, Blair Witch Book of Shadows. So, this movie came out in the year 2000, and I was trying to think about the first time I saw it, because I think I did not see it in the year 2000. I think I saw it later, maybe 5 years later, something like that.
Oh, see, I was the perfect age for this film. I was 15 years old. I was a Wiccan at that point. I was, you know, a goth. Everything about this film, like, ticked every fucking box.
You were like,
to me.
These are my people.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, amazing soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Check.
Check.
Like, kind of cheap graphics.
Check.
Check.
Everyone has a VHS player. Amazing.
Yeah.
The like, costumes, the goth look.
Like yeah, like, all, like all of their outfits were just perfect.
Yeah, it was kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching it and actually finding it quite scary the first time I saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
On this watch, though, I was not scared.
No. I mean, we did mention afterwards that, so I watched this film probably about 4 or 5 times in maybe, you know, between 2000 and 2003. It was like one of my like go-to like stick-on scary films. And then I didn't watch it again for a very long time until whenever I first got Shudder, which may have been just before the pandemic.
Oh, okay, so that recently is when you
rewatched. Yeah, yeah, at some point in the last 5 years, I watched it and I was so excited to see it. I'm like, oh my God, Blair Witch like 2, I loved this film, watched it and I'm like, what the fuck is this? So when we watched it again together for this, I was able, I'd gotten over the how not great it is. And I went back to being enjoying it with some like nostalgia.
Well, that's the thing. It's the nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it was Shane who said, you know, on the first episode he was on, that very much your view on a film can very much vary depending on your situation when you very first watched it. So I remember watching it and going in with extremely low expectations and actually finding it quite scary.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the idea of like losing your mind.
Yeah.
That, and that has happened in many a horror film. Much more effectively than in this one. I mean, even if you look at something like Candyman, right? Candyman makes Helen feel like she's lost her mind. And
yeah.
she has black spaces of time where she has, you know, killed a dog or killed somebody. And so she's in a psychiatric hospital. And so there was elements to me a little bit of that in this.
Yep.
Where there's spaces of time where they don't remember what they're doing. And I think it was more, it was scarier, obviously, in Candyman. I think that's the superior film. But I like that idea, and I found it very scary the first time I watched it. I think this is only the second time I've ever seen it. And, yeah.
Yeah, well, so I was 15 when this film came out, which means you would have been 18. So if
yeah.
you didn't watch it for about 5 years after that, then you're, like, you're in your early 20s where you, yeah.
It's funny because from the year 2000 until about 2000, maybe 3, and even slightly further along, I was so you've got to think, it's back in the day, you don't have smartphones like what you have now. It's really aging myself. But during this time period, there were a lot of cultural phenomenons and pop culture references that I don't get because I wasn't watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
I was so engrossed in my life at university. I was partying a lot. I was hanging out with friends. I was doing the whole college thing. And so like TV shows, movies, I wasn't watching them.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved at that time. So there is sort of like a gap where I missed a lot of these things. And so I think Blair Witch sort of came out during that time period. So I was aware of it. And I do believe I watched it later on like a DVD that someone had and I watched it. So yeah, I have not seen it as many times as you have. And I sort of missed that cultural thing with my age, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Even though goth is something that I've always very much felt linked to, I think, for anybody listening who's from Florida, more specifically Tampa, as an American, I mean, they used to mock Tampa as being the city of goths on, like, Saturday Night Live. They had a whole sketch dedicated to, like, Tampa the goth scene and stuff like that, where they mocked us for it. Which, really thinking about it, it makes no sense, because you're in one of the hottest places in the United States dressed all in black.
Yeah, this doesn't make
sense. But there was a huge goth community in Tampa, and I very much had loads of friends who were in that community.
Well,
and
you know, Marilyn Manson was from...
I saw Marilyn Manson before he was even big at a concert in Tampa, thinking, who the fuck's this guy? And he was ripping pages out of a Bible, which caused, like, a big upheaval. I mean, I personally didn't care, but it was... the adults were going nuts.
Yeah.
And I was probably, like, a junior in high school, maybe a little younger, when he was getting really, really big. But yeah, that whole vibe, like, yeah, I feel very connected to that goth vibe because of where I'm from. So I know what you mean, like, seeing their costumes and the way that they were, like, Wiccan, like, I identified that way too. So, yeah, it was a world that was very familiar. Would you have gone and camped at the site of the Blair Witch? Would you?
No.
No?
No. Why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I maybe would, to see if it would scare me.
I mean, no, I don't think I would. I'd go, but I wouldn't camp over.
Right. Like, you'd go explore in the daytime.
Yeah.
When it's safe.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it took place in the summer of 99 into 2000, and that is a very nostalgic time for me, too. I just graduated from high school, so I feel like it does sort of capture that moment in time, especially with all their equipment, all of their, like, 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, like, video equipment and cameras and VHSs and everything. Yeah, I really loved all of that, Jeff, with all of his equipment.
It was entertaining, and yeah, like, the first time I watched it, I did get quite scared. I was scared. You know, there are some scary bits in this film, and I think they were still there, they just didn't have the same effect on me now, because I knew they were coming, and I've seen it so many times. But yeah, I think for what it is, you know, I think they did a good job. I was glad that it wasn't I remember at the time being really happy that it was so different from the first film.
Agree. I think if they had tried to replicate that success that they found with the first one, it wouldn't have worked. Yeah. That shaky camera, real like found footage. And we talked in the original Blair Witch episode quite extensively about the marketing techniques that they used and how clever they were. And, you know, that was so very much of its time.
Yep.
And this came out, I mean, when did original Blair Witch was, what, 98, I want to say that it came out?
Yeah, 97, 98.
97, 98. And so this is meant to immediately follow. And the idea of the plot is to sort of capitalize on all of the attention that was being brought to Burkittsville and to what had happened in real life. And that real blurred line between, you know, because there were still people who thought that the Blair Witch Project was a real found footage thing. Again, we talked about an episode where I said I thought that. I had, like, a burned DVD of, like, a friend of a friend that had gotten for me, and I watched it on my desk, old desktop Dell, and it was so shittily, like, the quality was so shit that you could believe that they had found this. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that going sort of a different direction with this film worked in its favor, ultimately. But interestingly enough, the director that they brought on board, Joe Berlinger, his entire filmography is almost exclusively true crime documentaries.
Yeah.
And I thought that was sort of a clever choice, because apparently the two original guys from the first one weren't involved at all in this one.
No, apparently they read the script and hated it.
Fair.
Because it is kind of, you know, the whole film is a discussion on whether they should have done it as the way that, you know, marketed it the way they did, because like Joe Berlinger, the director, has said that, you know, he doesn't think it's right that they did it that way. He thinks it should have been very clear that it was fake.
Oh, what you mean in the first one?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So that was his whole idea for this film, was that he wanted to show that, like, violence in the media and things, like how people get so caught up in it. So he wanted a lot more ambiguity throughout this film as to whether or not they were just so caught up in their own delusions and things about the first film that, you know, mass hysteria takes hold and they all think that they're being...
Well, and they're super paranoid.
Yeah.
Well, because he says, and this is on the Wikipedia page for the film, Joe Berlinger says something about how documentaries are not just like shaky handheld
footage,
but it's also social commentary. And so he really wanted to emphasize that aspect in this particular film, but without using those techniques of the film footage, like, genre. And I think that he was successful in that, because it does make you question not just so much like what's real and what isn't, and what gives us the right to come into someone else's town and for the sake of exploitation.
Yeah.
Ultimately. Yeah, so very interesting. And Joe Berlinger, probably, I wonder how he feels about this film now. It would probably be quite interesting to hear his thoughts on it, if he stands by the film or if he's like... Because they certainly, as in the production company, certainly came in and made changes after the fact to his final edits.
Yeah. I don't think the film that we watched is the film he wanted to make.
Right. And so I wonder, especially with such a low score. And then if you look at some of the other things he's done, so he also...
He did the conversations with serial killers, so the John Wayne Gacy one, the Ted Bundy one. He directed and produced the film with Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy.
He loves Ted Bundy.
Yeah, he loves serial killers. He's like...
I mean, I do too.
So do I. I am a true crime junkie. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I love true crime, and I think, going back again, it was an interesting choice to choose him as opposed to a more straightforward fictional.
But I think that's why he didn't want to do it the same way as the first one, because he said of how irresponsible it would be for a well-known documentary maker to make a fake documentary.
Right.
I mean, that could potentially fuck up his entire career. No,
true.
Because no one would trust you.
That's so true, but I still stand by the fact that, like, the way that they did the first one was fucking brilliant.
It was.
And I don't think there was anything irresponsible in it, because if you do enough research, if you do enough due diligence, the information is out there that it's not real.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta think this film is supposed to be set, like, a year after the first film is released.
Right.
So it's still when everything's a bit, like, manic. But yeah, so I still have a soft spot for this film. I'm not going to rush back and watch it again. I think once in every 5 years is probably good for me. But yeah, like,
for me, twice in my entire lifetime is enough for me.
Yeah.
I think I'm good. I'm good now.
But yeah, it's the kind of film that, you know, when it's like late at night and you're like, oh, let's just stick something on.
It'll be interesting to hear, like, that when we explain our scores a little later, like once we've gone into the spoiler section, because I do think we'll have a little bit different take. But I mean, so what's, if you were going to summarize Blair Witch, Book of Shadows.
Oh, I'm not doing it in haiku.
Or am I? You could accidentally do it in haiku.
I can't, it's been a few episodes since I've done the haiku.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
Well, we made Shane
575? Is that what we decided on?
We just make up our own every time. It's different.
So Blair Witch 2 takes place about a year after the first one was released, and the beginning of it is kind of, you meet all these people who are, it starts off almost like a documentary where people are interviewing the people of Burkittsville, the town, and some of them are like, yeah, we believe in the Blair Witch. Mm. And a lot of them are like, I really wish they'd use a fake town name. Like, we have all of these people coming in and trashing our town. They all think it's real. It's not real. It was, you know, it was fake. And then you meet, like, this guy, Jeff, who runs like a shop selling all kinds of Blair Witch memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
And he does tours. So the film basically follows a group of people who come with him on his inaugural tour to go camp out at one of the sites from the Blair Witch Project. And they have a night in the woods. When they wake up, some things have, like, gone missing. Some weird stuff's happened. And they've lost time. And the rest of the film is them trying to figure out what happened whilst they lost the time, and they lost a few hours. And, like, creepy stuff starts happening to them all.
And they, I think it's worth mentioning that they, especially Jeff, wanted to capture anything on film. So they had set up all kinds of cameras.
Yeah, so they have, it's not just the handhelds that we find in the first film. Like, he gives them all a handheld, but he has them, like, set up, like, stationary,
like,
cameras.
Like, tripods, I think that's a really good summary.
Yes.
Yes.
We don't often do trigger warnings. I will do a trigger warning in this one. There is a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens about midway through the film. So yeah, just in case you can't really listen to that. But yes. So
yes.
If that's going to be an issue, don't listen to this episode. But yes, there is a miscarriage that happens in the film.
And then just to give a sort of spoiler-free rating.
Yeah.
How many runes?
Well, how many runes did we go for? I went for 3. I wrote the runes, and I even wrote which runes I'd written out. I used real runes, which made me laugh because they used them in the film and they're supposed to be evil signs. And it's like, yes, but you've literally done the rune for joy on him. I did Algaz, Wunjo, and Fihu, protection, joy, and money. That one looks like a bind rune, which where you combine two runes together to.
Oh, okay. It actually looks like a chicken foot.
I think for plot and story, it would have been, like, 2.
Yeah.
I think it just got that extra for me for, like, the nostalgia. There were some bits.
Yeah, the acting's not bad. You can give it a miss.
Yeah.
And so that, for me, like, deducted quite a few stars.
Yeah.
From it.
Yeah. My, like, sum up is utter wank, but in the perfect way for a 15-year-old Jenny to love.
Are you a 15-year-old Jenny? Then it's 10 out of 10.
Yeah, 15-year-old Jenny was like, this is the best film ever. I was like, it's got, you know, excellent soundtrack. There's, like, some sort of, like, orgy.
Yes.
Love the orgy. Mm-hmm. And then, like, anything involving CCTV or watching back videotapes always makes me extra scared, because that is a genuine fear I have of seeing something on like CCTV or...
Totally. Or, yeah. And you and I have talked about this, like when you're watching a CCTV camera back, like waiting for something to happen, like you're waiting for someone to step into the frame.
Do you know what? Because the shop I work in, we have like CCTV all over and the screen is like behind me where I sit, behind the till. And at night time, because it's a witchcraft shop and like things do move around on their own in that shop all the fucking time. And we'll be in there, I'll be in there on my own and I'll have all the blinds shut and like all the lights will be out and it's usually just, I'm usually just waiting for a candle to burn down when I finish like doing whatever it is I'm doing. And yeah, like I have to turn the CCTV screen off. I cannot have it on because I freak myself out.
Yeah.
Just imagining like watching it from a horror movie perspective, you know, there's a girl sitting there in a locked dark shop.
Really?
Like, doing something on the computer and you just see in the CCTV behind her on the screen like someone, yeah, no,
and this,
fucking
and if,
terrifying.
And if you think about the movies that have capitalized on this fear alone, I mean, the Paranormal Activity series, just to name one, but also...
The scene in the CCTV screen, CCTV scene in The Grudge is one of the scariest scenes ever.
And then entire movie is made around re-watching
what
a video.
What was the one
like...
about, fairly recent, was it The Vigil? Did you watch that? About the guy that has to go, it's like...
The Jewish guy.
Yeah, has to go and sit in and he's watching like a TV and something starts happening in the TV and you realise it's behind him.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Fucking terrifying.
But yeah, so I mean, this is a very like impactful way to...
And they do it differently.
And, I mean, they made an entire film series based on just that and it totally works.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And it's it happens in loads of films.
But as soon as you do that, and especially because such a big part of the plot of this film was done watching back videotapes, that instantly, like, just takes it up a notch fear level for me because I'm already expecting it. I'm already, because it already stresses me out.
Well, it's also blurring the line between what's happening realistically on the video and then what's happening that's supernatural.
Yeah.
Right?
And I love
and having
whole,
it on video.
Like, I love the whole idea of like, which one's real.
Mm-hmm.
Like what the what
yeah,
they go
exactly.
through, what they go through in this film, or what we see on the video.
Yeah,
which one is reality?
And again, it's that thing where it's a mind fuck because you're watching a screen of a screen. You're watching your TV screen on which there are other screens that people are watching something else. So it's all very meta.
Yeah, and but, I think I do wonder if the director had been allowed to release it the way he wanted, where I think it was a bit more linear. So you kind of. You know, the first part was very sedate, you see them and then they wake up and then it's them where they go back to, you know, everything that happens and then they go back to the house and then they're watching back the tapes and it's only in the last, like, I don't know, 10 to 20 minutes that you start seeing, like, the creepy things or, like, the weirdness on the videotapes. I wonder what would have worked better if that would have, or the way that we get it, which is very intercut. So there are, it jumps, like, all over the place.
There's two parts that they intercut in the film. One is towards the beginning where they're intercutting with what appears to be like a ritualistic murder.
Yeah.
And you don't know who it is and you don't know anything about it. So there's that.
That's in the opening credits.
That's in the opening. And it continues throughout the kind of first part of the film. And then the second half in the film, you have the events that are taking place in the moment being intercut with what seems to be a few hours in the future at the police station.
Yeah.
I actually found that doing that made it less frightening for me.
Yeah.
Because I know who survives and who gets to go to the police station.
Yeah.
So I always find when they do things like that in films when they cut
ahead. And I know the director didn't want that.
No, the director didn't want that. And so it's interesting that they chose to do that and I'm not sure why.
No.
Because I think Joe Berlinger is quoted somewhere as saying that he had bookended it, right?
Yeah.
That it was meant to be like the police scene happening here and then happening again at the end, as opposed to like switching back and forth. So I agree that some of the tension that you're ratcheting up is probably lost when you do that. So
yeah.
I can understand why he didn't want
that. No, and I often, that's the one thing I've always wondered about that film, like why they do that. But yeah, should we get into it?
Let's just get into it because I don't know how much more we can say without spoiling.
Okay.
This wonder of a film.
Let's go.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
So, it opens with like a title card that says, I should have got it written down properly, but it's like, this is a fictionalized, basically like showing very clearly that it's not a documentary.
Right.
It's a film about another film. About a film within a film.
Yeah, it is a film within a film.
Yeah, and it gets a little bit like, I don't know.
I found those title cards completely unnecessary.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think they were needed at all.
No.
But yeah,
yes.
There you go. And then you have kind of a news cycle. And I loved, again, the cultural touchstones here of like Kurt Loder of MTV News
yep.
popping up. God, Kurt Loder, where are you? I feel like we need to get Kurt Loder in for an interview or something. We've got to be able to find him. He was just like the guy growing up that he was like the cool news guy on MTV. Anyway, so you get this news cycle showing Burkittsville and kind of, and I believe if I read in my research correctly, this Joe Berlinger did go and interview real life people, which yep. some of which he got permission to use in this opening scene. So these will be like real life residents of Burkittsville, Maryland. And then other ones where they wouldn't let him use their actual footage, but he had actors recreate
yeah.
more or less exactly what they said. So this is very realistic that people in the town are unhappy about what's yeah. happened. Like you said, they were wishing they'd used a
fake name. Yeah. So in this, you get like the local people mixed in with some of the actors. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like you do see real people from the town that are like, you know, this is ruining our town. But then apparently the residents were really unhappy with the knowledge that they were making a sequel and actually chased them out of town. So the little bits of footage they have got is all they managed to scrape together before right. the residents were like, will you just fuck off? So yeah, we kind of meet some of them, and most of them are like non-believers. And then we meet Jeff, who's like got his little store selling little twig things that are all tied up, and he's a believer. And he said, but he says this straight from the beginning. He's like, oh, I wasn't here when the film came out. I was in the hospital. And then we get some really weird flashbacks to Jeff in like a mental hospital.
It's like the most cliche psychiatric hospital yeah, yeah, scenes that you could ask for. Like they're lifted like, straight from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, well, I think he says it's like the director specifically put them in as like an ode to something else. But yeah, like he's been like tube fed. You've got them like hosing him down in the showers while he's screaming.
He's got on a straitjacket. He's banging his head against the wall in a padded room. It's like literally every cliche yeah. you could think of.
And these are just like all crazy flashbacks. And then we open to the aerial shot of just all the trees. Beautiful orange trees with Marilyn Manson disposable teens.
playing. Which, it really sets you up. You know what you're getting into here.
But this is the thing. So we were reading before that the director originally picked like Frank Sinatra, Witchcraft. And it just would not have had the same effect,
no,
would it?
This is not the right setup. No. Because I think it's worth mentioning two things. One, it's the year 2000, right? And the internet was new. And it's so hard for us to really grasp that concept because we were so used to it. But I actually remember when there was no internet and when it was new. And it was this yep. whole big Wild West unregulated thing. And so in this news cycle, you've also got to remember that things are going viral.
Yeah.
I'm using quote fingers. Things are going viral for the first time ever. So this compounds the level of exposure that the city is getting. So I think that's worth mentioning because there are a few like throwback terms like I'm on the web. I just love
yeah.
that.
Oh yeah.
And also there was a scene where there's a cop literally chasing goths
yeah,
like, out of the woods.
And he was our favorite character, the
love
sheriff.
The cop. His accent is on point.
Yeah, he's amazing. I've forgotten his name already, like Larry something. And he's been in like Men in Black 3. He was in Signs. He's just like,
he's that guy. He always plays kind of that similar role.
Yeah.
Like if there's a sort of an agitated cop,
yeah.
it's probably him.
He just looks, yeah. And he's like, there's no goddamn Blair Witch.
He's got the mustache all
yeah.
the witch.
He's got a like ponytail. He's yeah, brilliant. I love him.
But yeah, so interspersed with this beautiful tree opening credit scene that Jenny described is also like a stabbing ritual blood body, you're not really sure what's
going
on.
No, you get flashes of, like, you know, a body being, like, someone being tied up and, like, ropes, and then there's,
like, I
have
to say, dumb. So dumb. I thought it was so dumb.
Knives
and stomach.
It did
absolutely nothing.
Yeah, like,
it was almost like the producers were like, oh, shit, wait a sec, it's a horror film and we don't have enough blood. Quick,
yeah.
I know what we'll do.
Let's do this.
Oh, my gosh. And the special effects, like, the blood coming out is very clearly, like, it's so thin. It looks like water, like dyed red water.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
it's
not
bad.
Very. It's bad. So,
this is no Tom Savini level effect.
Oh
here.
God, Tom Savini is crying about
yeah.
this because it's so poor. So yeah, again, soundtrack on point. Absolutely sets you up, and you see Jeff who has a big truck, and on the side of it is emblazoned Blair Witch Hunt, and
yeah.
this is like his company. Like Jenny was
yeah.
saying, he sells memorabilia and he takes people on tours.
But like just before that, we get the first flash of the interrogation room. So already we know that something like
oh
with
God,
Jeff,
yeah,
because
that's
it's
right.
Jeff, and he's straight away we see that Jeff's in the interrogation room,
yeah.
and the sheriff's like, we found blood in the van, and then we go to the van, and like yeah, so Jeff's driving his van, and he's got three people in the van with him. He's got Stephen, Stephen's girlfriend Tristan and a girl called Erica. Mm-hmm. So Stephen is writing a book.
It's like they're doing a research project. Tristan and Stephen are working together. Yeah, it's like so a dissertation, maybe.
Yeah, so he's writing, I think he's writing like a book. It's all about, you know, mass hysteria. Yeah. It's called like the Blair Witch hysteria or history. Because they're arguing because Tristan wants to be history or hysteria because she believes that it's based in something true. And Erica at the back is like some amazing 90s hippie witch.
Yeah, she's great. Love her.
She's really cool.
And apparently her, that like big red curly hair, all a wig. She had like short blonde pixie hair underneath
it. Oh no, I love her hair.
Yeah, I loved her hair too.
It's like my dream hair.
It looks like a picture.
Yeah.
Like, and they would draw like a witch.
Yeah, like, that's amazing. Like orange curls.
So you're introduced to the cast, basically. As Jenny said, you've got Erica, who's kind of the actual witch, you might say, like the Wiccan one. And then you've got Jeff, who's set the whole thing up, the driver. And then the couple who are writing the dissertation.
Yeah.
And they go to a cemetery to meet the final person joining the tour, who is Kim. And Kim is like straight out of the Kraft Firouzah Balk. Like
she's complete goth.
The white makeup, like with the black eyes, the black hair, like the whole outfit. Like you think of a goth. I mean, again, with the cliche.
I like Kim.
I like Kim too.
So like straight away, because like she's psychic. And
I basically liked all the women in this film. I didn't like the men so much.
No. And like they make a joke and she's lying in one of the graves and like, what are you doing? And she's like trying to find the energy and like, what, to speak to the goat, to speak to the dead people? And she's like, no, to get up.
Oh, Kim.
And I like her later on when she's like, I need alcohol. She's like, I've got alcohol. She's like, I need amphetamine. She's like, I've got weed. And she's like, both. Now. Both
now, yeah. She doesn't fuck around and I appreciate that. So they basically, long story short, all this introduction to the cast and they drive to, I think it's called Parm's House.
No, it's Russell Parr. So from the first film,
yeah.
It's where they were supposedly found Heather, all the tapes at the end of the first film.
So just as a quick reminder, end of the first film, you've got Heather screaming the house down, looking for her friend, and she finds him standing facing the wall in the corner,
mm-hmm.
and then her camera goes down.
Yeah.
And so that's where they found the footage, was in this the remains. Yeah.
So
of this house.
So Russell, just a bit of the. Going back to the lore, so the Blair Witch is supposed to be Ellie Kedder or something like that, and she was a woman who lived in the town of Blair, and then the villagers, they dragged her out, tied her to a tree, left her to die, and then the story goes that, like, some local village kids, like, hung her and killed her, and ever since then she's been haunting those woods, and then there was a guy who lived in the woods in, like, so then there was a group of people who were, like, murdered on a place called Coffin Rock, mm-hmm. where, like, five heads were laid out. And then between then and, like, when the first film came out, there was a guy called Russell Parr who lived out in the woods that supposedly, like, kidnapped and killed seven children
mm-hmm.
in the house. And this is all supposed to be, like, Ellie Kedder, the Blair Witch, like, making them do this. So they want to go. This tour, they're going to go to all the big spots. You know, they're going to go to Russell Parr's house and camp out there. And then the next day, they're going to Coffin Rock. So, yeah, they get to, like, the ruins of this house. And they're all walking in with all the cameras. Kim, the psychic, starts talking to Tristan and she asks about her pregnancy. She's like, how pregnant are you? And Tristan's like, 6 weeks, like, how do you know? And she's like, I just do. She's like, Stephen wants the baby, but you don't. And she's like, yeah, basically.
Yes, and so we establish a few things here. One, that Kim, yes, Erica might be the witch, but Kim is like, actually, maybe the psychic
one. Yeah, Kim is psychic.
And then that Tristan's pregnant. And I don't know about you, I always am on the fence about like throwing the pregnancy spanner into the works because it automatically makes whoever it is like vulnerable. And it just shifts the narrative to become all about like the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, and it does in this film a little bit too, to a lesser extent. So yeah, to a lesser extent in this film, it doesn't become like the sole focus, but it is a huge plot device. It is a huge driving force in the plot. And sometimes I feel like it's lazy. What are your thoughts on that?
When I first watched this film, I thought the whole thing with her pregnancy was like, ooh, creepy. Like, I don't know why. Mm. As an adult, I could really have done without that entire plot point. It didn't really bring anything. It made the characters, like, look worse in some respects. Mm. And also, I just found it, like, some of the reactions. And also, just for the fact that, you know, she's 6 weeks pregnant and she, you know, we've already said there's a trigger warning. There was a miscarriage. And just the whole way it all happens and the way it's handled and everything, I'm like, that's not how it works.
That's not how it goes.
That's not how it goes, yeah. No. And like the reactions of the other people.
Biologically, yeah, like, it's not realistic.
Like, this was definitely written by a man who has never had to even go through anything, let alone something like that.
100%.
Yeah. So yeah, I found it all a little bit like,
I think it's lazy storytelling. Yeah. 90% of the time it's lazy storytelling. Unless it's like Rosemary's Baby where it's the whole point of the plot. Yeah. Okay, fine. Or even like in some cases, like what was the other one? Like The Omen, the fact that like she couldn't have the baby, right?
Yeah.
And he switched it. Like whatever. Okay, then it makes sense. But when you just throw it in randomly, I don't know why, it just pisses me off. I just maybe it's like a gender thing for me. I don't know. It just feels really lazy. So.
Yeah. I wasn't overly keen.
So I agree with you that this whole thing could have done without it. It did not really bring anything. Because sometimes they'll throw it in there to up the stakes. And again, it's a lazy way to up the stakes. Yeah. Yes, it works. Anytime you bring in children, to a lesser extent animals, like certainly babies, you're going to up the stakes. But yawn. I'm yawning. So boring. So anyway, Jeff says there was a tree. There's like a tree in the middle of the campsite.
Yeah, and in the ruins of the house.
And Jeff's like, this, and it's a huge grown tree.
Yeah, it's like hundreds of years old, this tree.
And he's looking at it, and he's like, this tree wasn't here.
Yeah, this tree was never here.
It's like, not in the footage that I had previously, the photos, it does, it's,
everyone thinks he's this? Joking, and he's like, well, tell me this, why would there be a huge fuck-off tree? Like, why would they build a house around a tree?
Yeah, exactly.
And they all think, like, oh, maybe leave this off your tour next time. So yeah, we kind of learn a little bit more about the people. So so Stephen's talking about with Jeff about, like, you know, his book. Erica wants to commune with Ellie the Blair Witch. She thinks she's, you know, she's like, oh, this film set us back for hundreds of years. Everyone's coming after witches again now thanks to that movie. But, you know, I think Ellie was just misunderstood. I want her to be my mentor. And she's like rolling around in the leaves. And then she does something. She starts like casting this spell to release the evil in the ground.
I thought it was also a protective spell because she was going in a circle around the campsite.
Yeah, I think from a spell point, like spell casting point of view,
yeah,
I think it was.
We've got the fact checking here from Jenny, the actual witch. Yes,
I think that if you're in a location where, so even if, like, obviously the Blair Witch was never a real thing, there were some people killed. Like Russell Parr was a real person in the history of this film, and he in the history of the film he had actually murdered these children.
Yeah.
So these people had been murdered. So you want to, you know, she's there to kind of release any evil that's there. But I don't know, she's just very directionless. I feel like, you know, that's just asking for trouble. There are.
It's like she knows the rules, but she doesn't really know the rules. Like, yeah. She talks about how, and this is very true in Wiccan, you know, their beliefs is that you do no harm and you don't put anything bad out because if you do, it will come back to you threefold. This
yeah.
is a very common and known rule in, like, the Wiccan. Like,
I just think
she's all about nature, she kept saying.
Yeah, and I just think that maybe she, if there is something evil there, you wouldn't just want to release it. That's the problem. It's like, oh yes, I'm just going to release this evil. What? And then what?
And then what?
Yeah.
Where does it go? You haven't thought this
exactly.
through.
So they all decide to get really fucking hammered.
Yeah, so this is a very lengthy scene.
Yeah.
Which you can summarize as they all get fucked up.
Yeah.
So.
Like, really fucked up.
And it goes on for a very long time. And they're smoking weed and they're drinking and they're taking shots and they're flirting and they're, like, dancing and they're doing whatever. And it really only gets interrupted when another tour group comes upon this site and they have a little bit of like a showdown. Like, Jeff is arguing with the troop leader of the other group and he's like, we were here first, you guys go stay at Coffin Rock and then we'll be out of here in the morning.
Steven tricks them. So
that's right,
yeah, because Steven's like, so Jeff and the tour group, so basically you've got a tour group with two guys who are taking them and then there's like a Japanese couple and a German woman that they're taking around. And Steven's like, oh, and then he's like, oh, I'm just really shaken up about what we saw at Coffin Rock.
Yes.
We saw something.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're like, oh, guys, I'm so, like, the girls are like, I just want to go home.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. I'm so freaked out. And, like, the Japanese people are like, oh, we go to Coffin Rock. Like, so stereotypical.
Yeah, that was like a little bit of a racist
stereotype
there.
They were sort of very excited.
The Japanese and the Germans were not great stereotypes.
And the Germans, like, I didn't fly all the way from Berlin, because that's probably the only place in Germany they knew the name of,
right?
to see some trees.
Oh, the 90s.
So they decided to go off to Coffin Rock for the night. And
so they move along, and then we're back to the partying. And again, you've got great soundtrack. I really, one of my stars, honestly, is for the soundtrack.
Nicotine, Valium, Vicodin, marijuana, ecstasy, and alcohol.
Exactly, that song. Yeah. And so then you've got just more partying. And again, this goes on really for too long. I feel like you could have indicated the length that this went on without actually taking so much time in the film. You could have cut probably like a solid 15 minutes off this
There was
film.
A lot of it. And you have bits of it. So like,
it's like, we get it.
When the tour group have left and Jeff's like, I don't trust those guys. And everyone's like, oh, they'll be fine. They won't come back. And Kim's like, they're not coming back. And she's like, what do you mean? She's like, I don't know. That's just, they're not coming back. And the partying seems to end with Kim, like, lying drunk on some of the ruins and looking up and just having, like, a stare-off with the owl.
An owl.
And she starts getting flashes of, like, the gruesome murder that we see in the opening credits.
Right, in the opening, yeah. And so this ends the night in the woods. And so they wake up the next morning and...
We see Tristan walking to the river.
Yeah, she has
holding
crazy,
a little bundle.
Crazy dream.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know it's a dream to begin with. It looks like she's just going to get washed in the morning, and she's like holding a towel. But she walks into the river, and she starts like holding the towel under the water, and all this blood appears. And then you hear like a baby crying, and you just see like a what's supposed to be like a baby, like basically it's like she's drowning a baby, and she wakes up. And
it was I'm laughing only because like it was. A doll.
Yeah, it was so obvious.
Like a doll. I mean, it was not very well done.
it was bad.
But we get the point that she's having creepy dreams about abortion, essentially, or, you know. And so you wake up the next morning and they're all sprawled all over the campsite because the whole idea was that they were meant to stay up the whole night.
Yes.
Apparently they all passed out somewhere. I mean, drinking a whole bottle of Jack Daniels will do that to you. I don't know.
Eventually. And everything else they were drinking.
And everything.
And it's like when they're partying, you know, they're all there drinking beer and then like Stephen supposedly wants this baby with Tristan and someone's like, oh, how many beers have you had?
Yeah, I thought that like, was weird.
Because the correct answer is none. If you wanted her, if you wanted the baby,
I've only had like 4 beers.
Yeah, and it's like okay, fair enough that like she doesn't want the baby, but she hasn't made a decision about what she's going to do with the baby, and he does want the baby. So like, why is he like so like okay, yeah, let's just get fucked up.
Yeah, it's so true. I was like confused by that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so when they sort of stumble awake and they're getting their bearings, you realize that there's, it almost looks like snow or ash flying through the air, and it turns out it's all the, like, someone has shredded Stephen and Tristan's work, like, their dissertation.
All of their work, or they have this big argument, because it's like the cameras are gone.
The cameras are, well, everything's smashed, the equipment's all broken and fucked up.
But they can't find the tapes.
The tapes are missing.
But yeah, it's like snowing, and it's like a lot of the stuff they have are like original documents that they can't replace.
And there's just a lot of yelling going on. I just wrote lots of yelling. And again...
We get this a lot where everyone just starts shouting.
Oh God, it's like acting 101. If you have to yell to convey that you're angry, like, go back to acting school, man. So anyway, there's lots of yelling. And Kim and her psychic, you know, omnipresent knowledge tells them that the tapes are underneath a rock.
Yeah, she's like, at least the tapes are still here. And everyone's like, are they? And she's like, yeah, I don't know how I know they are, but they're here. And they're like, fuck off, no they're not. And she walks to the other part of the ruins. It's like, they're in there. And it's like where they supposedly found Heather's tapes.
Right.
So then automatically everyone's accusing her because, like, she knows where the tapes are. And while everyone is shouting again, Tristan stood against the wall and she's like, I want to go home. I don't want to be here. And then she puts her hand to her mouth and her hand's covered in blood. And they look and there's, like, blood pouring from her crotch. And everyone's like, the baby.
So she has a miscarriage. And then she's at the hospital, right? Like, they take her to the hospital and... You see the cop is there? He's, like, yelling at Jeff.
Yeah, because she has, like, pneumonia as well, or, like, hypothermia or something. And so, yeah, the sheriff's there, and he's like, why are you always getting into trouble? Like, I've got my eye on you, Jeff. Like,
I'm gonna send you back to the loony bin.
Yeah.
Because that's totally appropriate to
absolutely
call it the loony bin.
Yeah.
I prefer to have it referred to that way.
So at first they say that they're going to keep Tristan in until her temperature stabilizes, but then she sees, like, a weird ghost lady... thing.
Oh yeah, she wants out of there.
Yeah, basically. She's like, no, I'm not staying here. So they all go back to Jeff's.
Yeah, they decide sort of collectively. And if you think about the fact that they've all just technically met the day before, I also find some of these decisions a little baffling. Like, I know you want to see what's on the tape, but I'm thinking about Steven, right? Your girlfriend just miscarried the baby that you wanted to have, and your plan is to, like, let's go back to this total stranger's house so we can stay the night there and watch some videos. You don't even know him.
Yeah.
You just met him to do this tour the day before.
Yeah, I think they're, like, basically they want to find out, because they realize they've lost, like,
five hours.
Yeah, like, 5 hours of the night. They don't, like, the last memory they have is a lot earlier, and then they wake up and everything's trashed. So they want to know what's happened. And
but, I mean, would you stay?
No, and I wasn't sure if it's because she discharged herself from the hospital, if they were like, okay, you can't fly, because they'll say, oh, we'll go to the airport tomorrow.
Yeah, they do say that she needs to rest and she can't fly yet. So, okay, fine. But even still, like...
I'd stay in a hotel or something.
I'd stay in a hotel. Yeah. Like, and I know they're young and probably they're broke students, but I don't know. It's the whole... I'm not buying into this relationship.
No.
And the thing is that the actors, and the characters, rather, have good chemistry together.
Yeah.
I feel like they were well cast in that sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like... Yeah, you guys partied together for one night, and now you're staying in this guy's house. I mean, I don't know.
And it's not even a house.
It's like a abandoned factory.
It's an abandoned factory that was ready to be demolished, and he bought it for like $1.
And yeah. There's a bridge as the only way in and out, like a very unstable, dangerous-looking bridge, where Jeff is like, don't lean on the railing. On the railing.
Yeah.
Because
only way in or out.
Yeah.
There's cameras everywhere.
And so, yeah, but ultimately the justification that's given for them collectively deciding to stay at Jeff, a stranger's house, is that they want to look at the footage. And yes, Tristan can't go very far. Tristan is having weird dreams and visions. And so anyway, they get the footage up on the screen and they realize that the tree is missing from the footage. So that's
weird
thing number one. And then Steven hears Tristan calling him. So they leave Tristan kind of sleeping in the bed. And Steven, Jeff, and Kim, and Erica are starting to look through the footage. And then Steve hears Tristan calling him.
Well, they all hear her.
Oh, yeah, they all hear her. And so Steven goes to check on her and see what she wants. But she's, like, dead asleep.
Yeah. And then he hears crying, like, children crying.
Mm.
And he goes out and he has to go out the front door. And then they see that weird, he sees, like, the weird ghost child
on the bridge.
That Tristan saw. In the hospital, and she's walking backwards, and it's like, you brought it back with you.
Which is creepy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just wrote, Tristan is losing it, and Steven is not helpful.
Yeah, so Tristan heard the crying as well, because, like, he was like, what do you mean? She's like, what was that? And he was like, oh, it was me opening the door, because obviously whenever they open the door, the dog, it makes
There's
it sound
like a
dog barking.
Army,
There's no real dog there, just barking. And she was like, no, the crying. So he heard it too. Yeah, so Steven kind of, because Tristan's just being creepy, so Steven goes down to like the kitchen area and he sat there and Erica comes in. And bear in mind, you haven't really seen them have much interaction and she's been quite concerned about Tristan and the baby, you know, like hoping that she's okay.
She's being like a nice person.
Yeah, she's a
generally.
Nice person.
Yeah.
So this scene immediately feels really weird because Steven sat there like all stressed out and Erica comes over and starts like giving
massaging
him a massage
him,
and then like kissing his neck. And then she straddles him and they're like on the table kissing. And I think they're literally about to fuck. And she opens his shirt and he has these like bright red blazing like symbols. They're like runes basically all over him.
Yeah, she likes to she seduces him basically.
Yeah. And then, but yeah, they both have the marks. And so then she rips open his shirt. Oh no, she's like, oh, don't worry, I've got them too. And she slashes his chest and like, completely rips all his chest open, and then it cuts and they're both in the kitchen but they're both sat on opposite ends of the table,
which is where they've been
the whole time
initially.
And it's like,
but they both had the same vision,
because he looks at himself and then she looks at her hands like, what the fuck,
but they don't talk about it.
No.
And then they call Erica into the, so Kim and Jeff are looking at the footage and they call Erica in and they're like, you need to see this. And they call her in, and it's basically Erica, like, swinging around a tree naked.
Yeah.
And Erica gets upset because she doesn't remember doing it, and she's like, is this some sort of joke? Like, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And she gets really upset and sort of runs out of the room. But she says, we brought something back with us.
Yeah, she's like, at this point, she's properly freaking out. She's on the floor, like, she's cut, like, cast a circle, and she's rocking backwards and forwards. And what I don't, so, you think that she's, like, I don't know, trying to do something... for protection, maybe, because she's just chanting. But what she's actually chanting, she's invoking Persephone.
Yes.
Persephone's like the goddess of the underworld. And I'd be like, I'd be, you know, going for something. I'd be chanting something else. Yeah. You know, I think if I'm worried that, you know, we've got some kind of creepy evil following us, I would be going in a different direction.
Or going, like, full protective spells.
Yeah, which... not just trying to invoke, you know.
It was, I found it strange,
the goddess
too.
Of the dead.
With the little bit of knowledge that I have, I also found it strange. Mm. I wrote that she's having a ritual freakout.
Yeah.
And during this time period, basically, they all have runes on their bodies.
Yeah, so Kim goes in to try and calm her down.
Yeah.
And she shows that she's got, like, these, and we've already seen Kim's got a weird mark on her neck, but you just think it's, like, a rash. But then... Eric is like, no, like, Kim, they're growing. And she lifts up her thing, and they're all over her. Yeah. And they're all over Kim as well.
That was creepy, too. So Kim's like, I'm off to buy beer.
Yeah, bye. Fuck this. Yeah. It's like, there's no alcohol in the house. I'm going to the shop. Because you see them at the beginning, before they go on their tour, they go for supplies at this, like, little redneck.
It's always a little redneck convenience store. Always. Yeah. It can never just be, like, a Walmart. But anyway.
Everybody glaring at them. Yeah. Like...
So they, and she also, when she goes to buy the beer, she has, like, a bit of a hard time in multiple ways, but she sees, like, the seven kid ghosts, and she just ignores them.
Yeah, so, at the very beginning, there's, like, some teenagers outside the front of the place, and they're like, yo, Morticia, I got something you can suck on. And I love it, because she's like, all right, whip it out.
Yeah, let me
see. Like, go on then. And she goes
in. They called her Morticia and Elvira, both of which are compliments.
Yeah, like, I'd be like, yes. And,
I'd be like, thank you.
And yeah, she gets it. There's a woman in there who was in there earlier just pushing a cart around, and she, like, rams into her and calls her a witch.
Mm.
And she's just like, whatever. And then she goes to the till, and there's, like, a girl sat there, like, filing her nails who just doesn't want to serve her. And she basically, her name's Peggy. She flicks her name badge. And yeah, so, like, she gets into an altercation with Peggy, and in the end, like, she basically, because Peggy, she bags up the beer herself, she throws the money in Peggy, and she's like, keep the change, and she walks out. And then when she's in the van, you hear shouting, and it's the three teenagers, and they're throwing rocks at the back of the van and smash the back window. But then as she looks up from that, yeah, you see, like, these seven little Victorian ghost children in the road. They're all, like, little, like, flat caps.
Yeah. It causes her to basically run the... van off the road to avoid hitting them.
Yeah, and she bumps into a tree.
And she just kind of smashes, like, the front headlight.
Yeah, she hits the front fender, doesn't she?
And while this is happening, Erica's back at the house having her ritual freak out. And you can see that Jeff can see her on the video camera because he's got this CCTV footage set up all over the house.
So yeah, he's watching her.
They're all, like, having, like, the short story of it is they're all having fucking visions and losing
their
shit.
They're all going mad. So when... Kim gets back to the house and she's pulling the beer out. She cuts herself on something in the bag, and when she pulls it out, it's the nail file that Peggy was using, but it's covered in blood.
Mm.
And she kind of, like, looks at it, like, she's only got a little cut on her finger, and she's like, what the fuck? So she just drops it in the sink.
Yeah.
And
then she also discovers that Kim is back, she discovers that Erica is missing. All her clothes are on the floor laid out.
Well, that's the next morning.
Oh, is it the next morning?
Yeah, because when she comes back and Jeff's just sat in the chair really quiet with, and she puts the coffee there and she's talking to him. She's like, Jeff, I'm really sorry. I, like, bumped your fender.
Yeah.
And then she turns the chair around and she gets a vision of him being executed, like, in an electric chair.
Mm.
And she's, like, freaked out. And then he's like, what? What's the matter? And she's like, oh, nothing. And she just kind of sits on the sofa and curls up and goes to sleep. Because when he wakes up, it's because Erica is supposed to be driving Stephen and Tristan to the airport to take them home.
Yes,
so Erica's like,
I'll
get
it. Okay.
And, like, Erica and Stephen are really awkward when they see each other because, like, they're both still having flashbacks of their, like, sexy time fantasy. So, yeah, but Tristan doesn't want to go. So Stephen goes to get her and she's in bed and she's like, no, not yet. I don't want to leave yet. And when Jeff looks out the window, because they're looking for Erica now.
They see the car.
And the van is completely destroyed. Like, completely destroyed.
It's, like, total. Yeah.
They're like, well, where's Erica? And that's when they go in and they find her. And there's just a pile of her clothes on the floor.
And her jewelry, I mean, everything.
Yeah.
So wherever she is, she's not wearing a stitch. And so there's more arguing and yelling that takes place. And Jeff decides to call her family because she basically said that she was the daughter of a pastor.
Yeah.
And she was estranged from them, but whatever. So somehow, and I was a little uncertain about this, Jeff knows the number to call. He knows, like, I don't know. But he calls the pastor and it turns out that Erica was lying. And... they've never had kids.
No.
This pastor never had kids. So then all of a sudden you're like, okay, does Erica even exist? Is it just did she make this all up? Like, I found that.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure.
And so then they start talking about, I think it's Steven, starts talking about collective delusion or hysteria.
Yeah.
And that it's a real thing. And do they call the cop? Or does the, yeah, I think they do call the cop.
The sheriff calls them.
Oh, yeah, because the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jeff's like, oh, yeah, sheriff, I was just about to call you. I think I know who took all my stuff. And the sheriff's like, I don't care, like, turn on the TV. And he turns on the news, and they're talking, there's, like, the other tour group were murdered on Coffin Rock. And I love it, because the sheriff's like, look over here. And he's like, well, it's just in the background, waving.
Yeah, on the
TV,
phone.
On the TV.
Yeah.
And he's like, you guys are basically saying, you know, you're all suspects.
Yeah, he's trying to blame Jeff.
Yeah.
Basically, Jeff had a mental health issue, and so he's forever...
Yeah,
tainted in
exactly.
some way. He's potentially a killer.
And
then also, then you have an owl flying through the window.
Yeah, the owl that we see Kim had her stare off. Yeah, yeah, comes flying through the window and is
dead. I wasn't really sure, like, the point of all of this. I get that they're going for, like, symbolism or whatever,
yeah,
but I thought...
it's just a bit strange.
It's just kind of half-assed.
By this point, we get a couple of other, like, flashes into the interrogation room.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you hear them say, like, little bits to people. So by this point, we've had flashes... with Jeff, Stephen, and Kim. So we know no matter what, these three are...
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Erica's missing, and, you know, Tristan... We haven't seen Tristan yet, but, yeah, like, Jeff, Stephen, and Kim, we know they're all going
to
survive.
Well, Tristan's meant to be in bed still.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they...
But they're all tripping. They're all completely fucking tripping at this point. And then...
Well, they decide to get high, so they're...
Yeah, and they're all sat there, and then, like, I think Tristan says that, like, oh, Erica's outside, so everyone rushes to the window and can't see anything. And she's like, no, Stephen... look again, leaning against the wall, and he looks again, and he sees Erica dancing naked around a tree.
Yeah.
So he, like, runs to follow her outside, and she's on the bridge, walking, like, away from him, like, naked. Oh, she's got, like, pants on, that's it. Apart from that, she's naked. And as he starts walking, the bridge collapses, and he's, like, hanging there, like, trying to climb back up the bridge to get him back in the door. And you just see Tristan stood at the door watching him, and she's just like, yeah, okay, and walks
off.
She
doesn't help him. She
walks doesn't help
off.
Him.
Yeah.
And it's like Kim and Jeff
and Steven
come running and,
exactly. But I think it's also worth mentioning that it's at one point Jeff says to them that they can't leave. None of them can leave because otherwise he'll be blamed and he's not taking the flak for all of this. And he basically accuses Erica, and Kim is kind of defending Erica.
Yeah, Kim gets...
So it's like the relations are all breaking down, because
yeah.
they're all accusing each other, they're all suspicious, and they're all arguing.
Yeah, and, like, we already know, like, I think when they first arrive at Jeff's place, and Kim looks at him, and she's like, they should never have let you out, you're far from sane. So, and, like, all the cameras and things, like, it's clear
yeah.
that, like, even though he's no longer in hospital, he is still very paranoid, he still has some very severe mental health issues.
For sure. And it's, and I wrote in my notes here that everyone is losing their shit, yes, with stars next to it, but also I think that it's meant to be really scary in its disorientation, and I did not find it scary, but I think that's what they were going for,
yeah,
ultimately.
So I think, like, the thing that scared me the most, especially, like, later on, is when they're watching the rest of the film.
Well, it's this whole idea of, like, what's real and what's
exactly.
not.
Exactly. So
but I think as the viewer, I don't know if you feel this way, but after a while, for me, it becomes frustrating because it can only go on for so long.
Yeah. So, like, the bit where, like, Erica sees herself dancing naked around the tree and her freak out to that, like, that kind of thing does really scare me because it's
yeah.
like... You know, it's happened before when you've had too much drink and you wake up and you have absolute... It's only happened a couple of times where I've had zero
but
recollection.
You're like, what happened? What
and
did I do?
I get... I
had the fear.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've usually done something ridiculous. And it's just the worst feeling in the world. So the fact that, you know, they've got all this on camera and she has no recollection of it. And, you know, that this keeps happening. And obviously later on it gets a lot worse, the things that happen.
Yeah.
And they have no memory of it. That I find terrifying.
Well, yeah, and then there's the part where Kim opens a drawer to do something, and she finds, like, files.
Well,
on
yeah,
all of
because
them.
they're all going batshit. But Kim actually seems to be holding it together more than anybody else,
agree,
really.
Yeah.
But then, like, Tristan's gone full psycho. She's basically having dreams, but they're Ellie Kedwood's dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So she walks up and she's like, "They dip their hands in the blood and put them on your body," and it's like she's like, "But they're not my dreams. They're Ellie Kedwood's dreams." And she's like, "Jeff's having them too. Look," and points up. He's up on a walkway. And he lifts his shirt up, and his weird markings include little red
handprints
on them.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so Kim's looking for a... Kim's like, I need... Like, Tristan's not doing well. We need to speak to the doctor. like, do you have, and he's like, oh, there's like a Yellow Pages in there, like, grab that. So when he goes into the drawer to get out the phone book, she finds all these files on them, but they make no sense because there's pictures, like actual like hard copy photos of them as kids.
And Jeff's like, I didn't do that. That wasn't me. Yeah. And then I have here like the flashback to the interrogation room.
Because the files are the police files. So the files that she finds in the house and it's like, what the fuck is this? They're the files that the police, when they're being interrogated, and he puts them in, that's like their files. So it's almost like somehow she's found the files that...
From the future?
From the future. Yeah, it's a little bit... That one was a little bit weird.
It was weird. And even like, I was thinking about this as well. Who would have files like that? Like, unless you were under investigation for something. Like, there's not a file like that on you or me. We're just like regular citizens. Unless we're living in like the Matrix, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, they're all arguing about who did it. Yeah. Well, that's because they find Erica. Sorry, I skipped
well, yeah, because they first of all, they get a phone call from the sheriff.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm outside. Because he wants them, he's like, oh, you know, he wants them to come down. He's like, well, you know, we're busy.
Yeah, I wrote, the cop is at the front door, and I wrote, ?, the bridge is broken.
So they look on the camera. So the sheriff's saying he's outside, and Jeff's like, you can't be outside, the bridge is broken, looks up on the camera, and the bridge is fine. Mm-hmm. So Jeff goes to the door, opens the door, and the bridge is broken, but there's like big barking dogs.
Right.
The dogs are actually there.
Yeah.
So then he goes back in, opens a cupboard, and you see inside the cupboard, and then he just grabs his shotgun, goes to the front door, opens the door, the dogs aren't there anymore, the bridge is still broken. So, and Stephen and Kim are like, what the fuck, put the gun down. So he goes to open the cupboard to put the gun back. And we've just seen inside this cupboard and no one was there, like when he went in there. And when you open the cupboard, Erica stood there facing the wall.
And
a flashback from the first film.
And I found this really weird because she's meant to be dead, but she's standing up. Because they like turn her around and she's dead. But she's standing and they can turn her around.
Yeah.
That's not how death works. But
no.
Anyway, so now they're arguing about who did it, who killed Erica. So this is the big argument. And Tristan is saying crazy shit. And this is where the Widdershins kind of comes up again.
She starts, and I wish I'd found out what it is she starts saying, because she's like, oh, she's like, you know, Widdershins, it's backwards. Everything's backwards. The girl, backwards. You know,
so then they
decide. Every time we've seen people, like, you see Erica on the thing, she's dancing backwards. When they watched the ghost.
They decide that this means that they need to play the tapes backwards, that they can find the missing hours. So they do so, and they discover that they had way more fun than they thought they did, and there's orgies and rituals.
So they're all like dancing around at first, and then like Tristan stood up on the wall, and it's like she's like leading them. She's like, she's like getting them to do things, and then they all start fucking each other.
I have to say, they did it the way that they filmed it. It's not super explicit.
No, like, it's not. More, like, you know what's happening.
It's more indicated than anything else. You're not. It's not like, what was the orgy scene from Event Horizon? It's not like this.
No, definitely isn't like that. No, this is more like you just get like flashes of like Stephen, like obviously like fucking Erica from behind. He's like holding her hair. You just get like little flashes, and you can see them all just being like, what the fuck? But then like Tristan,
because she's leading it, they basically then turn on her. And so Jeff
accuses... because in the video, you see that, like, she hands them all fucking machetes. And they go running off.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck? Super creepy witch orgy.
So anyway, they're blaming Tristan, you know, in saying that she's the witch. And Jeff
is calling
her a witch.
She killed Erica. Jeff's like, you're the witch, man. And she's like giggling. At first she's like, no, I didn't kill anybody. But then she just like flips a bit and she's like giggling. And
and Jeff grabs a handheld camera. And so he's filming this whole thing. And so basically Tristan is like, what do you want from me? Do you want me to do this? And like puts a noose on herself.
And Stephen's like, Tristan, don't do this. And she's like, Tristan's gone.
And the thing is, I think, again, that this part is meant to be really intense and scary. And because there's so much just shouting, I just found it very shouty and not scary in the least. But I think it's meant to be a scary part. So, anyway, ultimately, Steven sort of accidentally on purpose. We're not sure.
She's like, Godin. She's like, go on, fucking push me.
Yeah, so he does. So Steven pushes her and she hangs herself. And so she's dead. And then...
I think at this point, as she's hanging there, they start remembering flashes of the other murders
mm-hmm. yeah.
that we haven't really seen yet, but we've had the flashes of. Because the next thing we see is a news report, and it's talking about how, you know, the Blair Witch is the movie, the Blair Witch Project, you know, has caused these murders. The three people have been arrested after two of them are dead. That they were killed after committing these gruesome murders on Coffin Rock. So the rest of what we see is, and you know, you see things like the bridge is fine, the van isn't trash, right. Like the van's fine. And yeah, so then they're at the police station and they're being like, we see different shots of the three of them being, and Stephen's like really upset and he's crying. They make Kim wipe off all her like goth makeup.
Yeah.
Get that crap off your face.
So you kind of found out that the people at Coffin Rock, the tourists, were disemboweled. And so Jeff and Kim and Stephen have been arrested basically. And Kim is also being accused of killing Peggy.
Yes.
With the nail file. So.
And she's like, no, that didn't happen. But then I love it. This is one of the scariest moments for me, that you see, like, they show her the CCTV footage from the convenience store, and she does. She just fucking, like, grabs the nail file and stabs her to death. And then Stephen's, like, talking, and the sheriff's, the detective's like, I can't, like, you killed your girlfriend because she had a miscarriage. That's low. And that's the thing, in the video, in the bit where him and Tristan are fighting at the end, like, he does say, like, because she says about how, you know, she had a dream and she hurt the baby, and he doesn't react very well to that. And
which I thought was dumb, like, for that to be the reason. Like, they're saying that Stephen killed Tristan because she had a miscarriage. Like, this doesn't even make any sense.
No.
So then the tapes show Kim stabbing Peggy and Jeff putting Erica's body in the closet.
Yeah, so Eric...
And Stephen pushing Tristan, and he quotes... fucking witch.
Yeah, because that's the thing, like, you see the video, he's like, no, watch the tape, Jeff filmed it, or watch it, and you watch it and you see it and it's completely different to what we saw earlier.
Exactly.
Like, it was completely different. She was begging, she wasn't laughing, she wasn't right. taunting them.
Taunting him, yeah.
Like, they did it.
And so you get this idea that the witch is to, or rather, the documentary people that started this whole thing, bringing goths there, it's kind of like, which came first? Right? Were they influenced by the media, or were they like this anyway, and then that's influencing the media?
Yeah.
And interesting that they chose Marilyn Manson as some of the music here, because that was the whole thing. Like, is Marilyn Manson influencing kids to be goths, or like, you know, even like the whole Columbine shooting,
absolutely.
That got blamed on him.
Yeah.
Video games get blamed all the time, or is it like just the people themselves?
Yeah.
And in this case, it's the witch. But yeah, I mean, also I would just like to note that at about... I don't know, at some point where we're talking about Erica's parents and her telling mm-hmm. lies, I started writing her name down as Catherine. So for the rest of my notes, I'm like, who's Catherine?
Who is Catherine?
I don't know. So it says, putting Catherine's body in the closet. Like, no, that was Erica. I don't know why in my notes I've...
And her name in real life is Erica. So it's not even like...
I've introduced a character called Catherine.
Catherine and Nigel. Like,
and that will tie it all together. Thank you very much. So, yep. Anyway, the tapes are wrong, and then the movie sort of ends. Basically, you just assume that the three of them go to jail, maybe forever, because there's all kinds of...
I'm presuming that Jeff gets executed, because that's what Kim saw.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Good shout.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then end film.
End film.
So... Yeah, I sort of stand by my two runes. What I wrote here in my notes is there are some good cultural stuff here and some disconcerting moments. The acting isn't great, but it's not horrible. I don't really think it's scary at all, as I remembered. The links to the first film are fun, and there's a good soundtrack, but generally I would not recommend, because you can live a satisfactory life without having seen this film.
Yeah.
The first one is significantly better, but I also think, and this again goes back to our episode, which if you guys haven't listened to it, I would recommend listening to it, because Jenny and I really go into a lot of the history and the behind the scenes stuff, but the stars were like perfectly aligned for that. It
yeah.
was like the advent of the internet and us not being able to tell what's real or what's not. There aren't really regulations in place for a lot of the stuff that's coming out bootlegged on video, this and that, and so they were very cleverly in their marketing capitalized on all of that. So whether or not you thought the film in and of itself, the first one, was particularly good, it was very much overshadowed by the whole question of whether or not it was real. And that made it scarier.
Yeah.
And so that existed in like a perfect vacuum where the stars are aligned. This one, you didn't have that. And they were smart to not try and remake the first one.
Yeah, definitely.
In that sense. But I do not think it was successful.
No. No, like I said, utter wank, but I enjoy it.
Utter wank just should be its tagline, really. But I mean, yeah.
I still give it 3 runes. I'd give it 2 for, like, the story and the main parts of the film. It gets an extra one for the soundtrack.
I mean, and the concept isn't bad. The concept of, like, the witch bringing something back with you, like, all of that is scary. And I think they could have made it scarier, you know, but
yeah,
making certain choices. So, yeah, the 14% on Rotten Tomatoes, I feel like it's a little unjustly low.
Yeah, I would still give it more than that.
Same. Like, for me, it's, like, up in the maybe 30 somewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, is it a great horror film? No. Not for me. But I'm glad that we reviewed it as part of our series of sequels.
Part 2.
And we just learned in our research that they made a part 3 in 2016 that is meant to ignore this film and be a direct follow-on from the first one. And this is something else that gets me about sequels in general. We're skipping this one, we're counting this one, we're not counting that. This version doesn't count. Like, I just think it gets messy. It gets fucking messy. Like, when you think about the Halloweens, like, okay, we're just going to completely discount Rob Zombie's versions of events.
Well, not even just Rob Zombie's. They literally cut out everything from
the second film. But then other ones, they did go, like, the third one carries on from the second one. But then when you get to another reboot, we're supposed to skip all of that. Like, yeah, all right, whatever. But it does make me sort of want to watch this third one.
Yeah.
Because it's the original guys from the first one coming back to do it. So I'm just...
They, including the girl who plays Heather, they are all at the horror convention this year that I went to last year.
Oh, really?
Love of Horror.
Are you guys going this
year? No, because we've got other things
in the works.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can't commit this year, but I'm sad because I would like to see that. I'd quite like to see the panels.
Yeah, I bet it would be really interesting, and I kind of wonder, like, what they've done since then. And
well, she sells weed.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. She's got, like, a weed farm.
But in this 2016, I think it's just called Blair Witch,
mm-hmm.
It's the brother of Heather Donahue looking for her, which I like that concept as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll...
Yeah.
In a future episode, we'll review Blair Witch. We'll cover the whole thing. Yeah. All right, guys. Please rate, review, subscribe. It really helps us out.
It really does.
We've linked our Instagram and Twitter in the liner notes.
Yep.
So find us, talk to us. We love you. Yeah. Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.
Bye.